This is the Todd and Friends Podcast.
I don't like to waffle on predictions. That doesn't mean I always hope I'm right.
Oh, what's he going to do? Oh, come on.
I'm with you.
So, thank you.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Todd, I knew we'd agree on something here.
From the KWLM Sports Studio.
I'm Todd Brigette. Thanks for joining us once again for the podcast. It's brought to you by Granite Bank in Spicer and Cold Spring, Equal Housing Lender, member FDIC. It's a Timberwolves Tuesday, extending these Timberwolves Tuesdays, hopefully well into almost summer. That would be June and would be the NBA Finals. I know, I'm getting a little ahead of myself now. But after just two terrific games against the Nuggets and being up 2-0, the sky is the limit for the Timberwolves. Cal Soderquist joining us. He's the studio host for the Timberwolves Radio Network, which has a lot more listeners these days. And Cal, thanks so much for joining us here today. And man, what a game last night. It was just a dominant performance. The Nuggets are with the Timberwolves for about 10 minutes, and then it was over after that.
Yeah, they closed that first quarter with the mini 10-2 run, and then 33-15 in the second quarter, and it was on from there. Always happy to join you, and you mentioned there you're getting a little ahead of yourself. I don't honestly know if we are.
I know, right?
Nothing's off the table at this point. After that performance we saw, obviously the Wolves have not lost a playoff game so far in this postseason, but that last night, when you consider it was on the road, you're against the defending champs, everything was sort of on the line for them. Obviously, there's still a lot of series left, but they knew losing the first two on their home floor is pretty dire. So it was a game that mattered for them, and the Wolves, without their defensive anchor, just absolutely bullied the Nuggets. Basically, after the opening few minutes in that first quarter, they were dominant. And I think, you know, for Wolves fans who woke up this morning, and if they check the sports books at all, the Wolves are favorites now to come out of the Western Conference, which is uncharted territory for many of us, depending on how long you've been a Wolves fan. And I think it's just time to embrace all of this. And it's probably easier to just embrace it than to try to make full sense of it.
The Wolves felt so good going into game two. They said, I tell you what, we'll play the Nuggets with one defensive player of the year tied behind our back. Rudy is having his first child. Can't blame him for wanting to be there for the birth of your first child, certainly. And I guess he called the Wolves in the afternoon and talked to the team, and, man, they took it as a challenge.
Yeah, that's what Anthony Edwards told Alan Horton just after the final horn sounded. He threw on the headset and chatted with Alan and Jim Pete, and said that Rudy kind of gave them some words of encouragement, sort of a go get one for me, and it was really, really impressive to see. I mean, Kyle Anderson slid into the starting lineup and filled up the stat sheet in his typical fashion, and I think his impact, too, it sort of goes beyond whatever his box score numbers were, but everyone kind of just collectively did a little bit more. You know, they were flying around. They were menaces on the perimeter. There's the viral clips already of Nikhil Alexander-Walker picking up Jamal Murray full court, and Jaden McDaniels sort of jumping in to help double. And, you know, we'll say this. A lot was let go by the officials last night. There was a certain style that they allowed. And if Nuggets fans or Nuggets players or maybe even coaches want to complain about that a little bit, we see that in the playoffs. And when that's the way the game is being officiated, it's up to the teams to sort of adjust and recalibrate what will or won't be allowed. And I think the Timberwolves thrive when they can be physical and when they can sort of just disassemble the will of their opponent with their physicality and their defense and their relentlessness in the fact that it is start to finish, first quarter to fourth quarter, whether they've got the 20-point lead, and it's basically for 90 feet, too, in terms of picking guys up full court.
I was listening to some of the TV commentary, and the one thing that they brought up a few times was that when Jokic brings the ball up and initiates the offense himself, their point per possession is like 1.5, which is ridiculous. So the Wolves obviously know this, and they've made him give the ball up. They have not let Jokic bring the ball up the floor, and that's frustrated him and Murray, and we saw that then last night, too.
It's little things like that, I think, too, that, whether it's whether it frustrates the opponent and gets in their head a little bit or sort of knocks them out of a rhythm, or maybe even sometimes, you know, it just shaves 10 seconds off the shot clock and makes them getting into their offense a little bit later in the possession. One of the things Denver obviously does so well is their unselfishness, especially the passing of Nikola Jokic. He'll always make the right pass if you're going to try to send extra bodies at him. So, I lost track of how many shot clock violations the Wolves forced last night. So that tells me that they were flying around. They were making those second and third efforts. And I really just think whatever, you know, credit to the coaching staff, too, the fact that they went into these two games in Denver. Their head coach is coming off a blown patellar tendon and can't get up off his seat. But they just went about their business and still implemented a game plan that, by all accounts, the Nuggets had no answers for. I mean, Jamal Murray, I don't know his numbers through two games in the series, but he's basically suffered the same fate that Devin Booker suffered in that four-game sweep of the Suns. The Wolves have absolutely pretzeled him to the point where he's throwing things on the floor from the bench. I'm still waiting to see what the league might announce today. Some people think it's suspension worthy. I go back and forth on whether or not that will be the case, but we'll obviously watch closely for that. But yeah, the Wolves right now are in Denver's heads, I think, completely. I wrote down at one point during that game, you know, the Nuggets are praised so much for their poise and their maturity, and they're normally unflappable, but they just they sort of melted down on their home floor last night, and it was stunning to see.
I didn't think it was sort of. I thought it was a complete meltdown, especially from Murray throwing heat packs, as you referenced. That'll be interesting to see how much they are going to let him get away with. I mean, they let Mike Malone charge out onto the floor and get right in the face of the official and screaming at him, and there was no technical foul even for that. So clearly the officials are under orders from the NBA. We're going to let the guys play more physically, so don't call too many technicals because it's going to be a little bit of a difference. That's what made that one in Edwards in Game 1 so curious, that they would call that one. Somehow it just ticked the official the wrong way.
Yeah, and I think, you know, in looking at that sequence, I think it was Carl Anthony Towns who sort of bowled over Jamal Murray.
Yep.
And there was a no call, and I think that's what sort of set Mike Malone off, and then the next chance he could, like you said, he was right out on the floor. Can't be all that sanitary to be that close face-to-face with an official. But I wondered in the moment, I kind of thought, you know, that's the version of a makeup call maybe, because you're right. I was quite surprised that was not a technical issue. That we thought maybe coming out of the timeout, you know, they would have issued it almost retroactively. But so that made a little sense as sort of a, hey, we're going to let you say your piece because you're right, we got the call wrong. But Jamal Murray, and I didn't realize this until about an hour after the game had ended, there's footage of him throwing a towel from the bench at an official as well.
So wow.
That's two different items. I don't think the little towel made it onto the floor like the heat pack did, but like Chris Finch said in his post-game press conference, he was asked about it, and I'm paraphrasing, but he didn't see it in real time. I think he had to sort of piece it together after the fact, but it's dangerous. Those things, they slide onto the floor in live action, and one of his teammates, one of the Timberwolves, could have stepped on that thing and went flying, and someone could have gotten injured. So I'm really, that's one of the reasons why I'm very curious to see how the league handles this, because it's reckless, it's dangerous. He let his emotions get the best of him, and the league over these last few years has put such an emphasis on, you know, guys can't leave the bench, right? During an altercation, there's a very small tolerance in terms of their policy for that. So there's really not a lot of precedent for something like this where someone, like, think of if someone was drinking a small glass of water or Gatorade and sort of toss that liquid out onto the floor and almost created a real-time live-in-play hazard. So we'll see. Certainly a fine. I mean, I can only imagine we know what the fine was when Rudy Gobert made that overt gesture late in the Cleveland loss back in March. So we'll see what the league hands down here at some point, probably today or maybe this time tomorrow.
Yeah, 25 points in the two games is all for Murray, and a minus 38 in his minutes on the floor. So they have really bottled him up. And Murray was the Wolves killer. There were people who were giving the Nuggets the edge over the Timberwolves in large part because of Jamal Murray. And the Wolves have just shut him down. And Nikhil Alexander-Walker, you know, they mentioned more than once Reggie Miller or one of the guys on the telecast last night saying that he was smiling at Murray all the time when he was defending him, basically telling him, you can't get past me, so come with whatever you have.
Yeah, Nikhil is playing with so much confidence right now. It's so awesome to see. I mean, you and I have talked about it throughout this season. I'm sure you and Alan have as well, but mm-hmm. What a revelation he's been. He was a throw-in in that trade, basically, at last season's deadline that brought over Mike Conley and Nikhil. And, you know, Jaden McDaniels, certainly he deserves his credit, too. He's got some unreal plus-minus numbers in this series, and he was awesome in the Phoenix series as well. But he battled foul trouble last night, so was not out there for as long of his normal stretches, probably not normally as effective as he is, but you slide in Nikhil Alexander-Walker off the bench, give him some extra minutes, and he shuts down Murray as well. And those guys are probably going to be teammates on the Canadian national team coming up here this summer. So that's a fun little added element of that individual matchup. But, yeah, and certainly it should be said, you know, Jamal Murray is not 100%. He had that calf injury that kind of popped up late in the L.A. series. Still hit the game winner in that game five, but I just think he's not able to do everything he's normally able to do, but also the Wolves deserve all of the credit because they know that, and they're swarming him, they're forcing him into turnovers, and they know that the Nuggets, without a fully effective Jamal Murray, are just a completely different team. I think they were 12-10 or 13-10 in the regular season when they were without him, so as good as Nikola Jokic is, they just don't have as many weapons to keep a defense honest if Jamal Murray is rendered as ineffective as he's been through these first two games.
Now, refresh my memory. Was it Caldwell Pope or Jackson that limped off the court and didn't return? They lost one of those two guys.
Reggie Jackson, and he was not able to put any weight on that. Yeah, so that's another thing to keep a close eye on, especially if the league announces any sort of a Jamal Murray suspension, because, you know, this Denver team, and it happens all the time to defending champs, right? You lose some of those key role players. Bruce Brown is gone. You know, Jeff Green played a little bit of a part, I think, but they're not deep. The Wolves have the superior depth, and it's not close. And so even if you lose a guy like Reggie Jackson, it's going to sort of have a ripple effect. And we saw it with the Phoenix Suns, kind of a similar roster structure. You know, they've got their big three, and when you lose Grayson Allen, it changes things in terms of what the Wolves can do and how they can sort of structure their game plan. So, yeah, the win, I think it gets lost a little bit, but that win is also huge because now the Denver Nuggets have to sit in that for the next 3 days as the series doesn't pick back up until Friday night at the Target Center. I think the league is, I don't know the exact timing, but they're going to announce Nikola Jokic as, you know, he's going to win his third MVP award, and he's going to have to probably accept a trophy and do a media availability, and all while they just got, you know, boat raced on their home floor. So it's sort of a fascinating next few days as this kind of percolates before we play game three in Minneapolis.
Yeah, Jokic a minus 28 on the plus-minus in the two games so far as well. And, man, I would venture that guy hasn't had a minus 28 over consecutive games in his career. I mean, he just is so effective out there. But they have big bodies to throw at him, and they're being physical with him. You know, not just in the backcourt like we referenced earlier, but in the front court as well. Talk a little bit about what it means that the Timberwolves have so many versatile defenders that can defend pretty much anybody on the floor, at least perimeter or post, so that they can switch all the time. And that makes it seem like you're defending six guys or going against six guys.
Yeah, it's a really great point you bring up. And I think, you know, whether Rudy Gobert is out there like he was in game one or, you know, obviously out last night, Karl-Anthony Towns deserves so much credit for his job defensively guarding Jokic through these first two games. And Minnesota as a team, you know, Chris Finch has said this for as long as I can remember, as long as he's been the head coach, and they've had to build game plans to slow down Nikola Jokic, a guy he's certainly familiar with, spent that time on the Denver staff, as did Mike Anori, the associate head coach for the Wolves. But they've always preferred, you know, to take away Jokic's ability as a passer. If you make him a scorer, make him one-dimensional, that's their preference, because then other Nuggets players can't really get into a rhythm. And the Wolves have that luxury that very few other teams do, where you've got a guy like Karl Anthony Towns, who is a big man, obviously, has the length to sort of body up Jokic, but also the speed and the lateral quickness to make sure he follows him around out in the perimeter, because he is sort of a three-point threat. He can put it on the floor a little bit. But like you said, it isn't just Kat. It's, all right, if Kat does get into foul trouble, or even if you just need to spell him, Naz Reid can do it for small stretches. Kyle Anderson took that challenge last night and has done this before. So it's not just the way they defend him, and it's a huge luxury to essentially allow Rudy Gobert most of the night to sort of remain as a free safety, and he can kind of still track everything in the paint, but also, you know, help on switches, step out to the perimeter at times. We've seen throughout the playoffs in the Phoenix series and this one that Rudy has held his own against smaller players out on the perimeter in those ISO situations. But the fact that the Wolves can defend Jokic in that way and throw different bodies at him, he had that quote, we played it in the pregame show last night, and I thought it was awesome. Some reporter asked him, you know, how he can combat the fact that the Wolves can throw these fresh bodies at him throughout the course of a game, and he said, I need a duplicate clone. That's the only way I can be as fresh and energized as the guys that are defending me. And so it's really a testament to the Wolves, and again, the roster that they built, and the guys like Kat, like KA, and like Naz that are able to hold their own and at least limit this guy who, again, is about to become the three-time MVP.
I think, how can you say that Tim Connelly isn't one of the best personnel men in professional sport? I mean, he built the Nuggets. That's his team that he built over there. Then he came to the Timberwolves, and he built this team to beat the Nuggets, which really, I think, helped the Timberwolves having the architect of that Denver team. Connelly, he knew that was going to be a good team that he had put together there, but he came over here for this opportunity, and he built the Timberwolves to beat the Nuggets, it looks like.
Yeah, there was a great contingent of Wolves fans. I know some folks who even made the flight out to Denver for these first two games. I mean, there were only Wolves fans left in the final few minutes of that fourth quarter last night. We heard the MVP chants for Ant. We heard the, I think, Wolves in four chants. Yep. But I don't know if anyone was having more fun in that building last night than Tim Connelly, because, like you said, it's got to be hard to not want to take a victory lap, especially after some of the early criticism of, you know, that Rudy Gobert trade that shook everything up and sent away a lot of draft capital for this Wolves team. But, yeah, he not only constructed that Nuggets team, and they went on to win a title, and it probably had to be hard to be in the Wolves front office and watch so many colleagues and friends reach the top of the mountain this time last year. But now he's absolutely taking it to those guys, and it's got to be a ton of fun for him. And they've sort of walked around it in press conferences, both Tim Connelly and Chris Finch, or maybe they've said it directly, but this team was essentially constructed, especially the Rudy trade and all the ancillary moves after, constructed to beat the Denver Nuggets. Yeah. I think they knew that Denver, with Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray as the core, Michael Porter Jr. and even Aaron Gordon, they were going to be the team that you had to get past in the Western Conference. So they bring in Rudy Gobert. They make the sort of the bet that they're going to be big. They're going to use size. They're going to use physicality. It's not an accident that this team is having this success, I think, against Denver. And again, we have to add this in. This is only two games, and the Wolves still have to win two more. They're in a great position with the next two coming on their home floor. But the defending champion Denver Nuggets are not the Phoenix Suns. I don't expect them to sort of roll up into a ball and lay over, like the Suns sort of did. That was really something to see in games three and four in Phoenix. I think the Nuggets will take these few days to regroup, and you know, depending on the status of Jamal Murray, that's a huge factor. But they're going to still throw some punches, especially in Friday's game three. But the Wolves, they have to feel good about, you know, the way the game plans have worked. They're going to get Rudy back for game three, and obviously they're going to feed off that energy in Target Center, which is going to be electric.
Cal, thanks so much. Have a great day.
Thank you, Todd.
Cal Soderquist, he is the studio host for the Minnesota Timberwolves Radio Network on a Timberwolves Tuesday on the Todd and Friends podcast. It's brought to you by Granite Bank in Spicer and Cold Spring. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
Watch for future episodes of the Todd and Friends podcast at KWLM.com or on the air here at KWLM 1340 AM and 96.3 FM.